Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Live from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
Hi again, everybody. I'm watching Tua Tagovailoa, and obviously a replay of the Thursday night's debacle, controversy, injury, concussion discussion, which will obviously be dusted off and talked about, which we will get into a little bit later in this show. Evan Giddings is alongside. What's up, Ev?
Well, way to start the show on a high note, Dan.
Just punch you right in the face. Let everybody know, hey, listen, man, we're not wasting any time.
Yeah, I think too soon, so I'll make one as well. You're making my head hurt with that. Why would you open up the show talking about concussions? I mean, we got week 2 of the NFL. We got the Giants sliding off a cliff. You know, we got a lot of things to get into today, Dan, as far as the Niners are concerned and going around. You know, I do have to come down your road for the Jets in just a little bit. But before we do, I got to ask you, where is your head at, man?
Well, first of all, Tua Tagovailoa, you know me, I'm a bit ADD. So as I was tunnel vision with all my notes in preparation for today's show, out of the corner of my eye, in my periphery, I saw Tua Tagovailoa and I just had to go there. But we'll get into him and the rest of the NFL in just a bit. Yeah, there's a lot going on. And I do want to detail the big game coming up tomorrow. Of course, it's the Niners taking on the Minnesota Vikings. It's a 10 a.m. kick here out on the West Coast. You know the storyline. Sam Darnold taking on his former team, the Niners. San Francisco with a little redemption after what happened last year and that Monday night loss to Kirk Cousins and the Vikings. We'll get into all of that. But first, let's do a little baseball. Why not? San Francisco Giants winding down another disappointing season in which they will come up short in terms of getting to the postseason. My big question to you, because you follow this, you and Sam Lubman are on top of this better than anybody here at 95.7 The Game.
I'm just glad I don't root for the team.
Here we go. Yeah, and thankfully you don't walk around with those knee-high orange socks as that only that man can rock. But are you, if you're the GM, bringing back Farhan? Are you bringing back Melvin? Are you bringing back just Melvin without Farhan or a variation thereof? What are you doing?
Well, I think both of them are going to be back, and that was kind of the biggest takeaway from the week. I mean, you know, they sputtered. They're a little bit below 500, a few games. I think their playoff percentage has dwindled to below 1%, so they need a Christmas miracle in September to try and figure out if they can get to the postseason. All of that is not really what we're here to talk about. To me, it is about the rest of the season determining what's going to happen next year, and I think it's already been determined. We heard earlier this week Bob Melvin speak with Andrew Bagley of The Athletic discussing how difficult of a year this was. And Dan, to me, number one, you're not going to sit down for an exclusive at length one-on-one interview if you don't feel like you have job security. You know, you're not going to put out whatever you believe was the reason why the season didn't go the way you wanted it to. You're not going to, you know, kind of dig into your own downfalls if you don't feel like there's a place for you in this franchise in the future. So I do think that Melvin's going to be back next year. And as a result, I also think Farhan Zaidi is going to be back next year. Now, we'll save the conversations of what the season next year could be, the offseason, all the rest. But to me, it was interesting to hear someone like Melvin, who's had some ups and downs as a manager. But overall, you know, he's won close to 2,000 games, I think. He's been a 3-time Manager of the Year award recipient. He described this season as being the most difficult that he has ever had to manage. And I find that fascinating because though this season has certainly been difficult to watch as a Giants fan, for the manager to essentially affirm what we've all been believing, I don't know if you find it damning, Dan. I don't know if you find it just interesting. I don't know if you find it concerning in regards to what next year is going to be. But the remainder of this season, I don't necessarily know what I'm looking for, but I'm certainly hearing things. And I'm hearing something from the manager that is a bit troublesome.
So, just to break it down, layman's terms, you think there might have been some dissension between the two, namely Bob Melvin and Farhan?
Well, Bob Melvin has not always gotten along with the higher-ups. Yeah. That's the reason why he's in San Francisco in the first place, AJ Preller in San Diego, and he never saw eye to eye. Bob Melvin did not really get along with someone like Manny Machado and the Million Dollar Babies that came and just beat his team 5-0.
Which, by the way, now that the dust has settled out there in San Diego, it looks as though the Padres were, and Preller were right in moving Melvin, because that's a good baseball team that might have been even better last year with Bob Melvin, who missed the playoffs with that roster.
Well, the Padres are a fascinating case study, because 2 years ago they were the NLCS with essentially a lower payroll than last year and with not as good of a team as last season. But you're right. Melvin might have been the, I guess, ingredient that needed to be missed or taken out of the recipe. But if I told you, Dan, that a team lost Juan Soto, Josh Hader, Blake Snell, and others and actually got better, I don't necessarily know if I'd turn my attention to the manager. I mean, I really can't figure out why they're so much better this season than they were last year, but that's neither here nor there. It is disheartening as, I think, a Giants fan to watch what happened last night against your best pitcher, Logan Webb, and essentially see the Padres, who are a lot younger, a lot more exciting, a lot more explosive, and their own ace, Dylan Cease, is someone that they've gone out and acquired via trade. So the Padres are in a better position moving forward and presently, obviously, than the Giants are. But I don't know if I'd identify Melvin as the issue. But my biggest question for the Giants is he going to have future issues with Zaidi? Because the other part that was unearthed during this conversation, in my opinion, and is a little bit irksome, is the fact that Melvin at times was second-guessing his own judgment due to this analytically driven, kind of framework that he's been presented with from this front office. And anytime you have a manager thinking about what they're doing too much, I just think it overcomplicates things, and that's not how baseball is supposed to be played.
Here's why I think that he's going to get another opportunity, and I'm talking about Bob Melvin. First of all, when you talk to Andrew Bagley, yeah, you're right. It could be one way of looking at it that he feels as though he has a sense of security. The other way could be that this is an opportunity for some spin, that I'm going to get a chance to convince him, because I don't know if the decision's been made.
Get out in front of
but
things.
But this will be an opportunity for me to convince people that I'm worthy of sticking around. The reason why I think he's coming back is pretty simplistic, and that is because of Matt Chapman gave him a vote of confidence. I think Matt Chapman intimated that I like Bob Melvin, and I want him to be, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing here, I want him to be my manager. And anytime players have all the clout right now in 2024 to any sport, and I think the fact that Matt Chapman blew into the ear of whomever when he's sitting down with Scott Boras and negotiating with the Giants about his new 6-year contract extension, I think Bob Melvin was a piece of that. So if Bob Melvin comes back, I think Farhan gets another opportunity, simply put, because I think that the GM or the Farhans of the world and the managers sort of go hand in hand. You don't want necessarily to have Bob Melvin and then bring in somebody that he's not familiar with. That never works at any level. So I think because of Matt Chapman that both of those two are going to get another opportunity. But would you say it's fair now, because a lot of us would talk about this throughout the season and try and describe, is it a hot seat or is it tepid? Is he coming back? Can we all agree that if indeed Farhan comes back and he's on borrowed time, that this thing is scorching hot? You got 1 year to get this thing right. In other words, you got 1 year to get us back to the postseason, and that holds true for Melvin as well.
Well, I don't even think it's just the postseason. Like, I think if Farhan wants to keep, you got to win 90 games. You got to find a way to put together a quality season. You got to win 90 games, and you got to win a postseason series. Just getting into the dance, to me at this point, with the lack of success over the previous 6 seasons, moving into your 7th season, I'm sorry, that's not good enough. I mean, what are we here for? What are we doing? Now, the one thing that I think Farhan is hoping could not only help the Giants but also save his job is the emergence of young talent. And probably the best news that we heard yesterday from the San Francisco Giants was the fact that they promoted their top position prospect, Bryce Eldridge, to AAA. And he had only played 9 games in AA. They're trying to expedite his development because there's not a lot of minor league season left. I think actually the Single-A postseason starts next week. Double-A has already been winding down. They're trying to get a couple of extra games in for him in Triple-A before he goes to the Arizona League complex and plays in fall ball. But the point is that Eldridge is 19 years old. He's your most recent first-round pick, and he looks like a stud. So someone like that, who's a 6'7", left-handed, power-hitting first baseman, has the potential to be the position player that you've been searching for what feels like the better half of a decade, really since Buster Posey left. And, well, not left, but I guess came into the league. You know, you have not been able to develop as many position players as you would like, especially in the power-hitting category. So someone like Eldridge is a plus. Wiz and Hunt in your minor league system is a plus at this point. Not that they're going to be elite players, but at least there is some sort of hope at this point, because I think the biggest damnation of this regime, Dan, is the fact that we've been promised all these players. And some of them have turned out to be good. Some of them have turned out to have hot stretches. But none of them have turned into franchise-altering players. If I asked you the best homegrown giant that you are looking at next season and feel like you know exactly what you're going to get from them, I think we saw him on the mound last night, and it's Logan Webb. And that's not a place you want to be when you have one pitcher to essentially sit back and say, all right, well, that's our guy. I mean, there's been nobody else for the Giants, and that's where Farhan has fallen the most short.
Well, I'd be very careful if I'm leaning in on the Eldridges and the Wizenhunts, if that's my future and that's how I'm punching my ticket as far as security, job security with the San Francisco Giants, simply because...
I don't think he has a choice, though.
Well, he does in that you got Chapman back, and I mentioned this last week, so that's a cornerstone. It's a foundational piece. Elliot Ramos worked out, so he's now a corner outfielder. What you need to do is, it's not Eldridge, because that's been, if you go down that road again, you know, we've seen him miss on Matos, we've seen him miss on Luciano, that I'd feel more secure if I'm Farhan, that I'm putting my money on a proven free agent. And I mentioned this last week, that I think that they're two players away, Willy Adames and Pete Alonso, from being that playoff team that potentially could win 90 games.
But what we've learned is that you can't rely on acquiring the services of big-name free agents. I'm not saying Willy Adames is, you know, Cal Ripken Jr., but I cannot go into this offseason expecting what happened last offseason, which is you walk away with arguably the best third baseman on the market and, of course, the top starting pitcher in the market, because it took you going into spring training and playing hardball with Scott Boras, who completely overshot or outkicked this coverage in regards to the market. The only reason I think they got Chapman and Snell in the first place is because their agent messed things up. Now, they took full advantage of that, and they retained Chapman, and I think you're right that Melvin has a big reason to do with that. I also think he was a reason why Snell felt comfortable signing with San Francisco. But I cannot rely on Farhan Zaidi to continue to do that, because he does not have a track record of doing it. So if your saving grace is free agency, I would just approach with a little trepidation.
Well, it's free agency, but it's not Shohei. It's free agency, but it's not Soto, and it's not Aaron Judge. I think it's sort of in that Soler wheelhouse that they can actually attract somebody. Like, I think Willy Adames is somebody that is sort of in that perfect tier that could attract him out of a smaller market like that of Milwaukee to come to San Francisco for more money, and they certainly have the money. And the same can be said for Pete Alonso. While he's a star, but still not in the stratosphere like that of the before-mentioned Sotos and Aaron Judge, and I think he's attainable. And to me, now that you have Chapman, it's not as chaotic, because things are beginning to make a little more sense now that you have your third baseman of the future. You got Bailey, and now it's just go get two more guys, and then the rookies... You're not as reliant on unproven talent like that of Eldridge and Wizenhunt. And if they do work out, well, then, you know, that's gravy. But I don't want to be exclusively relying on these kids, especially when I look at the recent track record of the Matoses and the Lucianos of the world. By the way, is Luciano, after that pop-up and the collision with Fitzgerald?
Yeah, I mean, that was earlier in the week.
I know that, but what the hell is, I mean, is where's he at in terms of his future with the Giants?
Well, I thought that was completely Fitzgerald's fault. If we're being a buck. I mean, he ran from shortstop 50 feet over to try and take a pop-up from the second baseman who was camped.
You're right, but you play baseball, you got to communicate, especially on the infield, and you got to call him off. And while you might be right technically, I think that when you look at the body of work, Luciano is just sort of this guy that is not very demonstrative and has been terrible in the field, especially at shortstop, that you can't necessarily, you can go back and forth, but the one thing that I would pin on him is just, bro, I got this. Wave him off. You cannot just simply let that thing hit the ground.
Well, I mean, it's obviously miscommunication that happens between young players. The one thing that I didn't like about Luciano was his body language after. I mean, he just put his hands on his hip. He didn't try and get to the ball. He didn't try and involve himself in the play because he was so pissed that a shortstop basically tried to jack his ball and ended up dropping it. So once they got into the dugout, they talked it over. I think it was funny that Matt Williams had to break him up.
Sarge. Yeah.
Big guy, Billy Badass Matt Williams. But I also think it was just a lot of people were putting that in the category of Luciano, can't field, bust, his fault. And I just feel like because Tyler Fitzgerald has been more of a fan favorite, that he's been skating. And to be honest, whether he communicates or not, if you are running more than 50 feet to catch a pop-up, odds are on the infield, there's probably someone there. And I don't care if you hear anybody. I don't care if Luciano didn't say a peep. Use your eyes. Like, the ball is in the air long enough for you to check and see your surroundings. In my opinion, that was completely Tyler Fitzgerald's fault. But it does, I think, it does symbolically let us know where the Giants are at, which is a team that just simply isn't on the same page.
Yeah, when it gets to Fitzgerald, I guess that maybe you know who your second baseman is and you're trying to cover as much ground because you can't necessarily rely on that guy. I don't mean to make any defenses. You're right. I think that technically, I think most people would side on Luciano that that's his ball. But the fact that the histrionics are not good when it comes to Luciano.
But right. As a player, you have to have at least a little bit of faith in your teammate to make a play. That's why he's a major league player. That's why he's on the field. I don't care if he is not a great, glovesman. I don't care if he is not a great fielder. If you're playing with a teammate, there has to be enough trust in them to make a play. And if he doesn't, then that's on him.
You remember Kelly Leak from Bad News Bears, the original Bad News Bears? He was the best player on the team.
I'm not going to lie. I've only seen the Billy Bob Thornton version.
And so he would catch everything. He was a center fielder, but if there was a pop-up on the infield, because Walter Matthau said, I want you to catch everything. So it created all this dissension within the team of the Bad News Bears. You need to watch the original with Bad News Bears with Walter Matthau and Tatum O'Neill, who was the wife of John McEnroe. They would later divorce, but John McEnroe, by the way, and his brother.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't cover enough, and we'll get into Tom Brady. I can't wait to get into Tom Brady with you.
Oh.
But they maybe just simply because enough people don't watch tennis, especially the U.S. Open. I know you do, but you know how critical I am. I don't care whether it's tennis, whether it's rugby, but I love McEnroe and I love his brother. And I love them on the call, especially McEnroe. Your thoughts?
Oh, John and Pat McEnroe, I think, are two of the best broadcasters that ESPN has. And it's so apparent that like the chemistry between them is obvious. I mean, they're brothers. But John has tempered himself over the years just enough to still be critical and go after a certain player. But I think that John McEnroe is the fiery one. Pat McEnroe will kind of push him or needle him sometimes to extract that out of him. Also, Patrick is good enough because I love them when they're with Fowler, who I think is actually a better tennis broadcaster than he is a college football broadcaster. That might be a hot take for some people out there, but he's fantastic. But when Fowler is the play-by-play, John and Pat can just go back and forth. Like, you won't hear Fowler talk for 5 to 10 minutes sometimes just because they're talking tennis. But because they have, I think, they're obviously similar, but they're opposed in their strategies, it just creates incredible conversation when they're discussing the storylines or the approaches of particular players. And if you're asking me, and unfortunately ESPN has lost a couple of big name broadcasters, and they've focused a lot on their Monday Night Football product. I think Buck and Aikman are still elite. But if you're asking me what I would love to just sit down and watch and listen to, I think it's the Manning cast and it's the McEnroe brothers.
The Manning cast, I want to get into them as well. And their analysis of one Brandon Ayuk.
That was pretty funny.
Eli Manning, like, sign your contract and get into camp and make that catch. But I'm with you when it comes to the McEnroes. And they're just, John McEnroe is so poignant, what it is that he says. And Tom Brady can learn from him. Just get in and get out. And just, you know, it's all about timing. And you're right, Fowler knows exactly how to lay out. What do I always tell you? Less is more. Sometimes you don't even know he's in the booth. You know who did it before him? It used to be on the USA Network, and who was the voice of the US Open for more than a decade, was a guy by the name of Ted Robinson. If that sounds familiar, Ted Robinson.
Oh, yeah, he used to be the radio play-by-play for the Niners.
Yes, and he was with the San Francisco Giants as well, local product.
So he still does the U.S. Open, but he does more of the preliminary matches. Like, when you watch on ESPN Plus or ESPN 2 on some of the first-round matches, he won't do the Ash Stadium games. I don't believe he doesn't do the main games, but he'll do the matches that are kind of, you know, like 17 seed versus unranked, or he'll do a lot of the preliminaries. He's really good.
Our man Tyler Fritz, I think I hit you up with a text because I was
Fritzy
is I mean, he just had nothing left. But that's it. I mean, when's the last time? Was it Roddick the last time an American won the U.S. Open?
Yeah, 09, I believe.
Wow. And so, I mean, that, and the fact that again it's New York City centric, and you got all those storylines. I mean, the stage was set. He came up well short. But just getting back to McEnroe, I don't know how we went down this road.
Well, by the way, do you want to hear what Peyton Manning had to say about Brandon Ayuk, word for word?
Let's do that.
I got it right here.
Man to man, Jennings. Oh, what a throw! Ayuk, he's a little rusty, Pate. You know, he's missed all training camp.
Get signed, get in training camp. There's a reason for training camp. You need it. We need the reps.
Oh.
Get those contracts done earlier so we can get in training camp. We don't drop balls on opening night.
Right, it's probably one thing catching passes, running routes. All of a sudden you're laying out for a pass, full speed, diving. That's, you know, that's why, yeah, those happen in camp. You make those, you practice those. That's just a little rusty right there.
You're still catching balls at a high school field from some quarterback that's 45 years old, my age. You're not catching balls from your quarterback. Get signed, get in camp, and we don't drop the ball.
It's funny, but there's a serious undertone to that.
Oh, there is. Also, you hear Eli kind of trying to tug on the chain, like, all right, heel dog.
Like, yeah, I could do without Eli. He needs to take the sock out of his mouth.
I love Eli.
Yeah, I'm more of a Peyton guy. Maybe I don't listen to it enough, but they're spot on. And I think it's not only Brandon Ayuk, but the 49ers cannot do this anymore because, yeah, you can beat the Jets going away, and thankfully that touchdown was sort of inconsequential, the one that they didn't, you know, he didn't catch. But if it was a close game, and Brandon Ayuk drops a ball, I mean, if you lose a game because a guy's not in camp, or you blame it on the fact that he was rusty or doesn't have the timing with his quarterback, and you're losing games because you can't get guys under contract and on the field in time so that they hit the ground running in week one, and you're losing games because of it, that's very problematic. And it's also very timely when you think about, you know, what lies ahead with San Francisco, and namely one Brock Purdy.
Well, Brandon Ayuk also had a drop earlier in the game. I know it was kind of dislodged by Sauce Gardner. It was just like a, you know, 5-7 yard slant, but he catches that ball last year.
Yeah, but you know what? The last 2 years he's been good.
But how many drops he had last year, Dan?
How many?
Two. He had two drops on Monday night.
That was it?
He had two drops all of 2023.
Yeah, I just want to go back to... He was good in 2022, but when you look at his body of work in the first 2.5 years in the NFL, he had a case of the drops. He was a guy that, while he could be really good, he also was somebody that would inexplicably drop a ball that was right in his hands. And that happened repeatedly. And you want to know why I know that? Is because Jimmy Garoppolo was the victim of many of those.
Oh, always bringing it back to Jimmy G. Where's our guys going to text and say, let Jimmy jacket? I mean, let's be honest. So now we're blaming Brandon Ayuk for running Jimmy Garoppolo out of town.
No, I know Jimmy Garoppolo was an inferior quarterback, but...
Look, yeah. I know you guys are both handsome, and so that's why you have an affinity for Jimmy GQ, Dan, but...
I do want to get into Sam Darnold.
Oh, we will.
Oh, man.
We also got to get into Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
Or...
Well, let's wrap up
can
our...
Can we just do his... Well, we could take calf out of his name, I guess, because he doesn't have one currently.
I told you last week that Jordan Mason was the guy, and that, or the drop-off wasn't that significant, and that, you know, you're better erring on the side of caution when it comes to McCaffrey. We'll get into McCaffrey. We want to get into Sam Darnold and talk a little 49er football as they take on the Minnesota Vikings. Two teams, 1-0. The Vikings coming off that impressive win over the New York Giants. San Francisco, of course, we all saw what unveiled on Monday night with their win over the New York Jets. Something has to give. Out in Bank One Stadium, kickoff tomorrow is at 10 o'clock, a short week for the 49ers. But let's just wrap things up with the San Francisco Giants. So I think we're both in agreement that both Melvin and Farhan are going to get another opportunity. We both agree that they are on that hot seat. I've told you what this team needs to do to improve. I think it's pretty simplistic. Go get a shortstop, move Fitzgerald over to second base, and get a first baseman. And namely, it's Willie Adames and Pete Alonso are the two players that could put you back into the playoffs in a 90-win team. What do you think they need to do in terms of improving?
They need their guys to stay healthy. They need their guys to play better. And I think they need to go out and find a couple of bullpen arms. Ideally, you do find a big bat. Ideally, you do find in Pete Alonso. But I'm operating under the premise, Dan, that they are not going to be able to get someone of his caliber. For example, Matt Chapman was signed, I think his extension 6 years, $150 million. If you want Pete Alonso, you're going to have to give him, I think, $200 million.
He can do that.
Well, you can do that, but why would he take your $200 million over somewhere else? That's my biggest question, because I also think that Blake Snell, I was originally in the camp that I thought that he would just pick up his 30, but with the way that he has pitched and as healthy as he's been, along with, maybe most importantly, the trajectory of the Giants' season, I don't think that it's a coincidence that Chapman signed his extension.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
During the season, and Snell chose to not when they have the same agent in Scott Boras. I do think that Blake Snell is leaning towards leaving because I also think that he can get a lot of money on somewhat of a more, not barren starting pitching market, but last year you were going to have to compete with Yamamoto. Jordan Montgomery was coming off a World Series campaign. There was a few more arms in the market last year. I think, well, Corbin Burns wasn't a free agent, but he was a trade candidate, and I think he's going to be eligible. I don't know if it's last year of arbitration or if he's eligible to get big bucks. But the point is that Snell, I think, is going to have less competition in this market and also is going to have, I think, a little more say in where he goes and trying to get in before spring training. So if I'm the Giants, honestly, I am banking, I am begging, I am on my knees praying that these young players that semi-emerge this season and that look like they could be something down the line, I need those players to be those guys. I need Ramos to be a 25-homer player. I need Fitzgerald to be an everyday middle infielder. And I need Matt Chapman to continue to do what he does. Because if this offense is at the same level it is next year, I think we're in for a similar season.
Before we get out of here, one of the deterrents in bringing Pete Alonso to San Francisco is that the Mets could, I mean, there's a little pixie dust going on over that's been sprinkled on that team. I don't know if you're following them, but that's a team that maybe makes a run in the postseason this year.
If they can't get Soto, I think they try and keep Alonso.
But that's, yeah. And especially if you know the magic that can happen in New York, and if Alonso's part of that in the postseason, he ain't going anywhere. All right.
No.
We're done with the Giants. Let's get into the 49ers talking a little football. We'll do that next. Evan Giddings, Dan Devone, just getting started here on a Saturday morning on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Evan Giddings, Dan Devone, Big Chick behind the glass, ready to go. 9:30 here on a Saturday morning. We're done with the Giants. Now, let's just go deep dive into the National Football League. And really quick, Zucci Mane, by the way, where you been, Zucci Mane? He used to be one of my regulars when I was doing evenings at 95.7 The Game. He's talking about, do the Dolphins, now that they're without a quarterback, reach out for one Jimmy, meaning Jimmy Garoppolo, who happens to be the number two behind Stafford out in L.A.? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure. Sure, they're making a lot of calls here, but if I'm anybody,
we got you, Ev.
There we go. No, I think, look, if they're reaching out to any quarterback in the market, Jimmy Garoppolo's name is probably coming up towards the bottom of the list. I mean, right now, I'd try and get Jameis Winston. I might even go after Trey Lance, I think, before Jimmy Garoppolo at this point.
I'd go Tannehill, I think.
If he could get Ryan Tannehill, that'd be fantastic. At least he's been a starting quarterback. But
yeah, and he's obviously did it in Miami. But Jimmy Garoppolo is a good number two out there in Los Angeles. Let's not undersell my man Jimmy.
If Matthew Stafford and his arm disintegrates into dust tomorrow, the Rams season is dead.
Wow.
Absolutely kaput, capiche.
I don't know.
Or bury it.
I don't know about that. And you want to know why?
What? Because of Jimmy G?
Well, because Jimmy G is not that bad. What Jimmy G can do is for Sean McVay, listen, as we saw in 2019 and in glimpses throughout his career, he can be good for stretches.
That's now, 5 years ago.
He can make some inexplicable throws, especially in the red zone. But what I think might be happening just sort of theoretically here is that there's only two players. Now, granted, it was only week one. Let's not overreact, even though we do and we will overreact.
This is what we do.
But there were only two players that threw for 300 yards in week one. And I know that listen, the preseason needs to either be extended by another game, or Steve Young says basically September is your preseason. So it takes a while before you really begin to hit your stride as a football team in terms of timing.
Who are the two quarterbacks?
I want to say one has to be Mayfield.
Baker, yeah.
And the other would be maybe it's Darnold.
Sam D against the Giants. Yeah, I'm honestly not sure. I did read that, and this is kind of aligns with what we saw last season. I remember reading an article about week four about how defenses are so much further beyond offenses at the beginning of seasons. Because it was around the time that the Niners, well, I guess that would have been later, week six, I think, against Cleveland. But the Browns had this historic start defensively, and it allowed the least amount of yards in the first 6 weeks in the NFL in some time. And it goes to show that no one is taking preseason that seriously. Like, the defenses are ahead of the offenses, and it's not even close. So the fact that there are only two quarterbacks that threw for 300 yards means that. And there was also a lot of a few defensive touchdowns. We saw some special teams returns with the new kickoff format. Yeah, offenses are a little bit behind.
Well, play your starters. This whole thing, because it gets really homogenous in the NFL. I think McVay started this a couple of years ago where he didn't play any of his starters in the preseason, and they went to a Super Bowl, and everybody else is like, okay, well, that's the way to do it. Well, I think you need to change that sort of philosophy. Unless you want to start the season at 0-2, which nobody wants to do, or 1-3, or what have you. By the way, when we talk about Jimmy Garoppolo and Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold, you know what I want to throw out there to people like yourself and the cancel culture out there?
I'm a part of the cancel culture?
No. For the sake of this discussion, you are.
Okay.
Is that let's not just throw dirt on guys and saying that's it. Let's not just have this binary, either you're a number one pick and you're going to lead us to a Super Bowl or you're trash. Look at Baker Mayfield and what he's doing with Tampa Bay. Look at Sam Darnold and what it is that he's... Look at Geno Smith. How many times have we just said Geno Smith is trash? That's the end of that.
Wrote him off. He didn't write back.
Obviously, bouncing back. We have a tendency to do that when it comes to quarterbacks. I'm not putting Jimmy Garoppolo in that class, but I find it interesting right now that we're finding a rash of QBs that are getting an opportunity in the right system. And are able to produce.
Well, I will. Jimmy G's done. His career will never again be featured as a opening day starting quarterback in the NFL unless the actual starting quarterback that a team wants to be their QB1 goes down with an injury. I'm very confident in putting that take out into the world. The other part is, can we please pump the brakes on Sam Darnold a little bit? It is week one.
Well, I've always been a Sam Darnold guy, so you're talking to the wrong person. But
for those
of the bandwagons that are now into Sam Darnold, yes, address them, not me.
Well, and we can get into him if you want. I also know we got to dig into McCaffrey and how his injury impacts the coming weeks. But I also think, Dan, if you're just looking at backup quarterbacks, you're right. You can't necessarily write off particular players. But Baker Mayfield is, I think, a bit of an outlier because he never really was in a place at the beginning of his career that could kind of feature his talents. Like, situation does matter. Now, I know he reset a lot of rookie passing records, but after that, he sort of fell off. And then he remade himself in Carolina. McVay helped him a little bit. And then it's just very interesting to me what happens when you get a gunslinger around with a bunch of weapons and you're able to piece it together. You know, I don't think Baker Mayfield is an elite quarterback, but he had close to an elite season a year ago.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think Cleveland would want him now or Deshaun Watson?
No, hell yeah. Dude, Jameis, well, that's why I also don't think they're going to trade Jameis Winston. I mean, Jameis Winston might be your starting quarterback by week four if Deshaun Watson and that $77 million cap hit can't pull his head out of his you-know-what.
Jameis Winston's become like an NFL meme with his... Have you seen his...
Yeah.
His little speeches before the games?
He had a lot of trouble in college. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. But he has become somewhat of a likable figure in my mind. Just because... He just seems harmless. Like, he's kind of neurotic and a little strange. But his off-the-cuff remarks during pressers or... I don't know, pre-game pump-up sessions.
It's hilarious.
If you're his teammate, I feel like you can't help but like him because you're not really sure what he's going to say next.
Wait, why are we pumping the brakes on Sammy Darnold?
Because it's been 1 week and you played the New York Giants.
Well, here's what I would say about Darnold and why. I like Shanahan, and Shanahan had an eye on that guy from day one, and one of the reasons is when you just look at his career. I mean, who in their right mind, if you were drafted by the New York Jets, what was that, back in 2018, number three overall, and you go to the Jets, this is pre-Robert Saleh, pre-Aaron Rodgers. You had Adam Gase and that press conference. I still don't know what the hell he was looking at. And then from there, you go to Carolina with Matt Rule. Imagine for the sake of this conversation that if Brock Purdy, let's just say Brock Purdy was Sam Darnold, and he goes to the New York Jets with Adam Gase in that offense. And let's just say then he goes to Carolina. You think Brock Purdy is Brock Purdy, or is Brock Purdy, parking car somewhere?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. And that's why I'm not going to completely discount Sam Darnold. I just need to see more than one performance against maybe one of the worst teams in the NFL. But you're right. If I'm comparing the two quarterbacks this weekend, it is a glowing example of the fact that situation matters. You know, Sam Darnold, in many ways, is the antithesis of Brock Purdy. Now, Darnold was the highly touted quarterback out of USC, number three overall. Brock Purdy was the last pick in the draft. But as a result of being the last pick, Brock Purdy finds himself with the most loaded and talented roster in the NFL. And he has maximized it so far in his career, and he's done a hell of a job. But his first season as quarterback... His offensive coordinator was Bobby Slowick. His quarterback's coach was Brian Griese. I'm not even going to get into the Shanahan thing. But both of those coaches that he had to work with are very talented and proven. Sam Darnold, on the other hand, was not just drafted to Adam Gase. Before that, he was drafted to a Todd Bowles team. And his first offensive coordinator, that was his last year in the NFL. He does not have a job and has not had one since 2018. Then you move to Adam Gase, whose career has been made by just an association with Peyton Manning, who's his own offensive coordinator and has now been proven to be somewhat fraudulent as a play caller. So you're right. And then Sam Darnold gets traded to Carolina, where he's basically competing with mediocrity and has to jockey with Cam Newton. And then he moves to the 49ers and now has had to remake his career. Sam Darnold's career looks very different if he's drafted to the 49ers. Do I think he has as much success as Brock Purdy has? No. But they are two very opposite situations. And for Sam Darnold to be a player that was as touted as he was to turn out in the place that he is, you would imagine it'd be converse, that Sam Darnold would be in the position that Brock Purdy is and vice versa. However, because of their draft situations, they're very different. And I would argue polar opposites.
Sam Darnold is in a really good situation for the first time in his career. And it's almost as if when you look about what happened last year, it was the perfect opportunity to allow him to be the starter this year. He was basically an understudy in the same system, in that he goes from, as you just laid out, the chaos in New York and the bad coaching out in Carolina where nobody wins, And then you go to a place where, wow, okay, I got a quarterback whisperer in Kyle Shanahan. This is a place where people win. And for the first time, you know, he begins to do things the right way. And he's almost like one of those guys who's like pre-med, just learning. And that sets the stage for him to go to. Now, I know that Kevin O'Connell and Shanahan aren't necessarily linked together, and Kevin O'Connell isn't out of that Shanahan tree, but he is out of the McVay tree, right? He was the OC, the offensive coordinator with the Rams, and then he gets the opportunity with the Vikings, and we all know that McVay and Kyle Shanahan cut from the same cloth going back to their days, whether it was Washington or even before that. So the offenses are very similar. So he gets an opportunity to sit in the classroom and learn last year as the understudy, and now he gets an opportunity to be the number one in Minnesota. Do I think that he'll have a good game? I do, but I still think that Minnesota collectively is an inferior team to that of the San Francisco 49ers.
Well, I don't think anybody would doubt that, but he does have the benefit of having the best wide receiver in football, or second, if you like Tyreek Hill. But, you know, this weekend he's not going to have Jordan Addison. He's not going to have as great of a defense as he would have if he was a starter for, say, the San Francisco 49ers. No, like, the Vikings are an inferior team, and the 49ers, quite frankly, should handle them tomorrow. But the one, I think, glimmer of hope is that it is a coaching battle. Like, that to me is what could lead the Vikings to victory, because talent-wise, they are not in the same stratosphere as the San Francisco 49ers. But Kevin O'Connell, I believe, is a damn good play caller. And I also think that Brian Flores is somewhat of an understated defensive coordinator. And what he was able to do last season to a Niners team that was missing a couple pieces with Trent Williams and Debo Samuel, he was able to confuse Brock Purdy a little bit. But this is also where I think Brock is different than Darnold. So I wanted that soliloquy about situation and how it does matter. But Brock Purdy so far in his career has been a quarterback that has not he doesn't make mistakes two times. He learns quickly, and I think he's more cerebral than a player like Sam Darnold, though he might not be as talented physically. I don't think that Brock Purdy is going to struggle with Brian Flores tomorrow, because though Flores is, he's been compared by some with the way, you know, kind of like Jim Schwartz, who gives Kyle Shanahan fits. He's been put in that class as a DC, but Brock Purdy is somebody that I think once he goes through it, has shown that he's able to learn from his mistakes. And so I think he'll be able to handle whatever Flores and the Vikings throw at him tomorrow.
Yeah, Flores really disguises things really well. And he gives you different looks. And he also likes to blitz, like those zero. But he brings that. I love that. When you just bring everybody, man. And he did that on a couple occasions and got burnt last year against the Niners. But, yeah, you're right. I think somebody said this, that Brock Purdy can go through a progression 1 through 5 faster than anybody currently in the NFL. I mean, he's a cerebral, smart quarterback. But even Brock Purdy, and listening to him in his post-game comments this week, was talking about his timing being off. I don't think that was a good game by Brock Purdy, but in the second half, he looked a little off. I mean, he missed some guys. And I know that he overthrew and aired one out to Juwan Jennings. I think he dirted one on an attempt to, I believe it was Brandon Ayuk. And he talked about, you know, I need to get my footing right. Like, I need to get up in the pocket. I'm paraphrasing here. But he was talking about how I need to, you know, I need to adjust in the pocket. All those little subtleties should have been taken care of before the start of the season. And that, I think, is sort of what you're seeing throughout the NFL, is that, you know, thankfully you win a game and that you can eventually, you know, get knee deep and start to wade into the season. And then eventually hit your stride, you know, a month into it. But you can't do that at the expense of losing games. So I think everybody, including the Niners, need to readdress how it is that you perform in the preseason and how you go about things during camp, whether it's more reps or more game speed or playing the ones. Because even Brock Purdy admitted in what was sort of a lackluster second half at times, although that dime he threw to Brandon Ayuk was amazing, despite Ayuk dropping the pass. But even he admitted that my footwork's a little off.
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, it's not just a Purdy problem. I think it's league-wide. You know, the rookie quarterback that everybody was excited to watch, Caleb Williams.
Trash.
Well, but his line looks a lot better if Keenan Allen catches a touchdown. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, he completed 9 passes. He wasn't very good. But similar to Purdy, the line looks different if someone is able to haul in. By the way, Keenan Allen was also somebody who did not play in the preseason whatsoever. So he's a veteran receiver. I think he's one of the better wideouts in the NFC, but he didn't have preseason. He's sloppy. So
yeah, but Caleb was bad. I know the play you're talking about.
Well, no, they didn't win the game because of Caleb Williams. They won the game because of their defense and special teams. Yeah. But again, it's like, you know, the line I think is a little bit more forgiving if your receiver catches a ball. So, you know, like I don't think Purdy looked incredible, but this is also where he has the benefit of being able to feel out a game, because Purdy does not have to do as much as other quarterbacks all that often because of the talent on his team and also the reliance on say an unsung running back or a defense that is just making Aaron Rodgers' life absolute hell. But I think Brock Purdy does get some credit for me in the regard that, unlike other quarterbacks, he does have a feel for the game that I don't think other quarterbacks have, as to say he knows what it takes to win. And so he's not going to step outside of himself unless he absolutely needs to. Now, there's privilege in that because he has the privilege to look around the game and say, well, if I just take care of the ball, we're not losing this game. Like, there's no way that the Jets can beat us unless I throw three interceptions. And so I'm not going to do that. I'm not putting the ball in harm's way, which is why you might have seen some of those balls come out a little bit flat or maybe not on the same page. But at the end of the day, if you're telling me Brock Purdy had, I would say, like a B-minus game, maybe a B, and they still won going away, that's a pretty good place to be.
What Brock Purdy is? He's the quintessential Kyle Shanahan quarterback. And that's the only sort of prism by which you have to look at this. This whole idea, oh, he wouldn't work here, or he's a system quarterback. Well, yeah, he is a system quarterback. And he's in the perfect system to execute what it is that Kyle Shanahan wants to do throughout the course of a football game. Since he's been in San Francisco, Kyle Shanahan has never had a quarterback that can do all the things that Brock Purdy's able to do. Is Brock Purdy, does he have the strongest arm in the NFL? Does he have as strong as arm as Sam Darnold? No. Does he have the ability to run like some of the players, like the Lamar Jacksons or other players in the NFL that play his position? No, but can he do enough of both? Yes, and it's not about that. It's just about executing what it is that Kyle Shanahan in his innovative passing scheme wants to do, and he's the perfect guy for it. So all the conversations about, I wouldn't pay him that much money, or he wouldn't work over a year, he's not a top-tier quarterback, stop! Who the hell cares? Kyle Shanahan only cares about one thing. Who's going to execute what it is that I want to do? Jimmy Garoppolo couldn't do it. He would at times, but then when it counted the most in an NFC championship against Green Bay, he's like, listen, you're handing the football off because I'm not going to have you lose this thing after we come this far. You're throwing the ball exactly seven times today. Trey Lance, you're not the guy. Finally, I found a guy, and I don't care that he's Mr. Irrelevant, but he can do everything that I ask. Shallow cross, put it on that outside shoulder. If I need you to extend a play, he can do that just enough. Does he know where to go with the football? Yes. Can he go through his progressions? Yes. Perfect. That's all Kyle Shanahan's asking for. And as 49er fans, you just need to see it through that lens. He's the perfect guy for the head coach of the Niners to execute what it is that they want to do.
Well, I do think there are a lot of guys that could be the perfect guy for Kyle Shanahan, but Brock Purdy has the...
Why can't you just agree with me one of these days?
Well, I think we agreed on the Giants in the first segment, and so after we're done, then we can move on. No, I think there are a lot of, quote, perfect quarterbacks, but you're right in that Brock Purdy has the requisite skills that I think Shanahan looks for, and that is primarily just situational awareness. Like, I think Brock Purdy's situational awareness is his biggest asset, and, you know, the computer up top, like, that's where he makes his bread, or will make his bread in about a year. But, I mean, I don't want to go as far as to say that other quarterbacks wouldn't be perfect in the Shanahan system. I think Brock Purdy is a very, very good quarterback. And if Kyle Shanahan has a very, very good quarterback, he can turn them into a great quarterback. That's how I read it.
Like, I think Shanahan, he'd love to have a Josh Allen, but I don't know that, I think that, like, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow would be a perfect quarterback, but there are certain quarterbacks who are really good and really elite. Somebody had an issue with me using the word elite, but some of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, there could be somewhat of a struggle because Because good quarterbacks want to do things on their own sometimes. Like, they want to get to the outside. They want to extend plays. And Kyle Shanahan's just, like, believe in the system. That's why he coveted Kirk Cousins. Like, he doesn't necessarily, he's not looking for that blue chip, five-star, best quarterback in the NFL necessarily. I mean, he loved to have him. Patrick Mahomes, sure.
Well, but, I think he traded up to try and get one.
Trey Lance?
Yeah, Trey Lance wasn't that guy, obviously, but it wasn't as if he didn't attempt to go get one. He just hasn't had an the reason why Kyle Shanahan hasn't had a chance to get a top flight quarterback is because the majority of those quarterbacks are in the top half of the first round, where the Niners never been outside of one season at the top end of the first round. Well, I guess you could say 2018, but like as he was building, I'm saying once they become competitive and Shanahan has had a chance to have his players in his system, you don't have a chance to go get a top flight quarterback because, to his credit, Shanahan has won pretty much double-digit games every year he's had a full roster.
He's done it with Matt Ryan. He wanted Kirk Cousins. And now I think he's just very content with Brock Purdy. And, you know, you talked about Trey Lance. Something that I want to get into as it relates to Trey Lance, and I do have a bone to pick with Kyle Shanahan. We'll get into the conversation with Christian McCaffrey. We can start it now and continue in the next segment.
Bone to pick.
Well, with Kyle Shanahan,
they were mad at me,
and running the football with Deebo Samuel, like what the hell's going on here?
He's a running back,
but he's not.
Well, he wears number one now. That's more of a running back.
I like
number.
That.
That looks slick.
Although I'm not a big fan of the senior on the jersey. It just looks kind of weird. Not gonna lie. Also, the fact that did he change his Twitter name to One Problems? Because he was 19 Problems, which sounds so much cooler. I'm just saying, Deebo, I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze when it comes to the jersey. What do you think, Carter?
I didn't know that Deebo actually has 19 tattooed on his back. Did you know that?
I did not know that either. Well, so is he going to get the 9 removed? Or?
That's why you never get your jersey number tatted and a name. Like, that's... I don't have any tattoos, but when I was thinking about it, I dated this woman from Brazil when I was a young man, and I'm like, I'm going to get Nada. I'm in love with this woman. I was like 21.
This guy.
And I'm like, I got to put Nada somewhere on my body. And I remember this guy is my photographer, and I was a sportscaster in Fresno, a young, young fella just out of college. And he's like, let me tell you something. Don't ever get a name. I'm like, no, Nada's going to be with me forever. Like, this is a lifetime thing. Like, 8 months later, I was dating someone else, and I was like, bro. Thank God I don't have Nada on my body for the rest of eternity.
To be fair, there is a difference between getting a number tatted on you that you literally can't control whether or not you have, and getting the name of a woman tattooed on you, which you also have very little say in. Well, I should say you do have very little say in, because she could just walk out on you any day, as I've learned a few times.
All right, by the way, she now lives in one of the greatest names. We'll get to a break. The greatest name for a city... It's in Brazil, and I just love saying it. Bon Jesus. That's where she lives.
Bon Jesus?
Bon Jesus, yes.
Bon Jesus. Oh, yeah, because I'm assuming they speak Portuguese there.
Portuguese, yes. Yeah. But Bon Jesus. Where are you from? I live in Bon Jesus, baby. All right, we continue. We're going to talk about the 49ers. I do want to tell you why Deebo Samuel as a running back really concerns me. We'll do that and much more when we continue with Emmitt Gettings, Dan Devone, Big Chick, right after this on 95.7 The Game.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.